If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this episode of Mind Pump, so for most of the episode, we talk about the best exercises, and we break them down into two major categories, isolation and compound movements. Now, that part of the episode starts about 15 minutes in. For the first 15 minutes of this episode, we just do our little warm-up conversation. We talk about TOing, that's a turnover in sales talk, sales, and skillful and pushy salespeople. You might want to hear about the time Justin got bullied by someone selling
hammered me.
Windows. It was a good time. Also, I'd like to tell everybody before we get started with the episode that our flagship foundational fitness program, MAPS Anabolic, which is great for boosting metabolism, building muscle and strength, is 50% off. So if you go to mapsfitnessproducts.com, use the code RED50, R-E-D-5-0, no space, you'll get half off. On that site, we also have our other MAPS programs. Some of them are designed for people who have athletic goals. Other ones are more designed for the bodybuilder, physique competitor, or bikini competitor type-minded individual. We have correctional exercise programs. We have strongman training programs for the for people who just want to do the strongman training in the gym. So with barbells and dumbbells, but you train like a strongman. It's really fun.
Like a beast.
Lots of programs, all at mapsfitnessproducts.com. Do you remember the first like the first big TO you got?
That I from somebody else?
Yeah.
That somebody TO'd my deal?
Yeah, like the first time somebody came in.
I know the only time that somebody TO'd a big deal of mine that just blew my mind when Larry did it. Like that was he won all of my respect that day. Because up until that point, you know, I believed I was the ill nana. Like I was just you're not bumping my training deal. Like there's just not gonna happen. Like I don't care who you are, how talented you are, like. And that doesn't mean like I didn't TO deals to like my buddy a lot of times. And I think sales guys don't do this enough. I think they get confident in their own skills and they don't utilize the benefits of a TO. Like a TO is a very strong tool.
It's an incredible tool.
Even when you don't necessarily need it. Like it's just a great it's a great sales tactic in when closing deals. And so my good friends and I that were in sales, we would use each other even when we didn't necessarily need each other just for the impact of the TO. But never, ever did I ever turn a deal over to somebody and then walk back to the deal and they got more than what I had set them up for, except for the time that I did this with Larry Evans. Hmm. And I'll never forget it because I remember that I was like, we were going after some competition or something, and I don't know if it was him and I that were competing or we were trying to break some fucking sales record in the company, but we were on our hustle, no doubt, both him and I and then our whole staff. And I had got this this butcher and his wife, and she was unemployed. He was a butcher. And, you know, what I was really good at was building a relationship with people fairly quickly. And to where you felt very comfortable with me to the point where you've trusted me with your health and fitness. And now it's just about what can you afford? What can you do? Like you've sold me, Adam. I know that you can help me. I know that I need this. What's it going to cost me? What do you recommend I be? Mm-hmm. That was the conversation.
And throw a lot of meat analogies in there.
Right. Totally. And you know, I could get people to, I kid you not, would open up and share me what's in their checking account and how much they have on a credit card available, and I could get them to
how much training can I get for this, because this is what I have.
Right, yeah. Exactly. I only have this much money to spend, right. and so I had distilled this conversation down after about 2 hours to like all the money they had available to spend, and I was doing it like, okay, well, you know, we'll put this much on the credit card. We'll put this much down today. You know, I'm like, I had this all set up, and I'm like, it was a big deal. And I turn it over to Larry, and because I, you know, at that point, one of the things, this is how Larry and I would use each other, is Larry's the sales guy. I'm just the health and fitness guy. I'm just here to tell you what you need and help you out. I don't really do the money thing, but I would turn it over to Larry.
Take the pressure off.
Right. I would turn it over to Larry and say, hey, you know, this is what's going on. I'd tee it over and I'd walk in the office and I'd say, hey, you know, this couple, this is their financial situation. This is how much money is on their credit card. This is how much they can spend. This is the membership they can afford. This is how much personal training that I've recommended for them. Go get it. You know, and I remember doing that and then walking over to my office and sitting in there and like watching the computer, like waiting for him to like wrap the deal up, because he's in there talking to him and talking to him and talking to him. And then here it comes, like on the SMR, right? Starts popping up. And the first thing that pops up is the membership that I didn't want them to get because it was a very expensive.
He messed it up.
Yeah. And I'm thinking like, this motherfucker, right? He took some of the money that was going to go on the training side, which is my side of the house, right? Because I'm in charge of fitness. And he put more of it on the sales side of the house, which was the membership side. And so initially I'm going like, this motherfucker, I'm pissed off. But then boop, pops up, boop, boop, keeps popping up like, and this guy, and then and he's walking out and he's like, and I see this grin on his face and he just keeps going to the printer and he's printing contract after contract off. And he bumped my deal. And I had never had that happen to me my entire career. It's the only single time that somebody had ever gone in and bumped a deal of mine. And why it was so impressive was because it wasn't me being lazy. You know, there's been deals where I know I've probably been lazy. Someone just said, hey, I want to buy. And it was just, I went to the easy close and I didn't spend my quality time with them and present a big package. I just said, hey, this is what it is. Well, I spent a lot of time on this. Like, I definitely felt like nobody else would have got this but me. You know, I definitely mm-hmm. built time and value in what I presented. And for him to do that, I was just like, holy shit, dude.
Yeah, TOing is a time-honored sales technique. But really, again, I love talking about sales because it tells you a lot about how to communicate to people. It's fascinating because it reminds you that when people communicate to one person, and if they say yes or like, if I'm trying to communicate an idea to somebody and it's just not working, that doesn't mean they're not open to my idea.
Mm-hmm.
That means, or to the idea.
Yeah. It means you're poorly communicating.
It means they're not open to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the idea still is up in the air. And so I can bring someone else in who may communicate the exact same idea. Mm-hmm. But just either
connect better.
Do it better.
Yeah.
Or do it differently or whatever and get that. And this is a valuable thing to understand as a parent. Because as a parent, and that's why I brought this up, as a parent, you're always TOing. You're constantly TOing with your spouse, with the other parent. It's like mom is trying to communicate something to the kids. It's not coming through. You know, dad comes in, tries a different way of communicating. It's a different person. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get this through, or vice versa. And this is just, I learned something from TOing
when your teacher comes in, TOs, you know, coaches. Like, I swear, like, a lot of times my kids will respond to everything I've told them, but only after they hear it from like their coach or somebody else.
Oh, that happens all the time.
And it's like, what? I've told you that. Yeah, it's a powerful thing to connect with somebody else. That's a fact.
It's such an important skill to learn because, especially with what we do, we're trying so hard to get people to understand just how valuable it is to exercise and eat right and all that stuff. And we also know that, you know, you've never done this before, so the odds of you succeeding by yourself are quite low. The odds of you succeeding when you're working with a professional are much higher. So, okay, let's talk about this for a second. Maybe your idea is that you were going to walk into this gym and spend $30 a month and maybe $150 to become a member, and that's kind of your teetering on. But okay, fine, I'm decided to do that. Well, here I am, the fitness professional, whether I'm a membership salesperson, a general manager, a trainer, or whatever, and I know the odds of success super low. Like, okay, great. You're going to spend $150 here. You're going to pay $30 a month. You ain't going to, it's just not going to work for you because it doesn't work for most people. I know your best bet is to invest in hiring a professional, which is going to, by the way, Mrs. Johnson, going to cost you 10 to 20 times more than what you were already agreed on upon doing. And so it's important to you know, these skills are so important. I remember, When I first became a trainer, I was very like, I like to talk and I had a great time and I liked what I was talking about and I was effective, but then I wasn't effective sometimes. And it was because I wasn't a good listener at first. And I remember the first time I got TO'd like that was one of my mentors. He came in and said 1/10 of what I said, but convince them. And I remember thinking like they just must not like my face or something, you know? And he sat me down and he's like, you know, he goes, you got to listen more. You talk to some, you got to, it's okay to talk,
right,
but you got to listen more than you talk.
Right. Say yeah. more with less.
And I remember like being blown away by that. And then of course, later on, TOing as a manager for me, because you know in my gyms I always ran on purpose, and I really always tried to get the staff to understand what we're trying to do here. Yes, we're selling memberships, yes, whatever, but what we're really trying to do is help people and drive with that. And so TO was a great way for me to, because it's easy to criticize people, it's hard for people to receive your criticism until you show them
mm-hmm.
what you're talking about. Like if I told, there were many times I would tell my salespeople, because one thing that people have a bad habit of doing, especially salespeople, is they'll judge someone by how they look and immediately think, this guy's not going to, they're not going to want to spend money on hiring a trainer. This person's not going to want to invest in their health. Mm. And so they'll do the real quick breeze, you know, tour and blow them out the door. And I want to talk to the next guy because this is going to waste my time. And I used to tell them, no, don't judge a book by its cover. Spend as much time, you know, spend a lot of time with each person and listen and ask what their goals are and train, really figure out how you can help them. And so when they would blow people out, I'd get real mad. I'd sit down with them. Sometimes they'd have a real tough conversation. And there was, you know, Lawrence, he's a good friend of ours.
Yeah, yeah.
I had this conversation with him. He took someone, blew them out the door. I said, what happened to the guest? Oh, they just wanted to, you know, a free month pass. That's what they walked in with. I'm like, yeah, but what are they going to do in a month? Like, what about this, that, and the other? And he's like, they don't want to buy anything. So we had this big old argument. So later on that day, we're having the sales meeting. He's in the office and the front desk person rings me and says, hey, we have a guest at the front who'd like a tour. So I look through my window. I look back. This is at Hillsdale. So I can see the front desk and I look and it's a homeless guy. Looks like a homeless guy. Like legit. The dude's, you know, looks like he's living on the street. So I looked at Lawrence, this is right after we had that conversation, and I said, you're going to spend 45 minutes on this guy. You're going to ask him all his goals. You're going to do everything. I want you to treat him like you would treat anybody else on this tour. And it was like serendipitous. He goes out there, does the whole thing. The guy ended up hiring a trainer and getting a 3-year member. He needed a place to shower, paid cash for everything. And after that, Lawrence was like forever. He was forever changed, you know? There were other times when
perfect
I would...
Perfect timing.
Yeah, there were other times when I have people, guys come back to my office and be like, they're just, you know, they're not interested in joining. They just want to look around, this, that, and the other. And so then I'd, you know, I'd walk out and I'd talk to them. And 5 minutes later, of course, they were, you know, many times they were members. It was great, a great way to show people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're not saying what you're trying to communicate the right way. They're just not hearing you the right way. And more importantly, you're probably not hearing them. So it's a pretty funny thing that, but I think there's TOing gets a bad rap too, because it's the old car sales.
Yeah.
Let me get my manager.
Yeah. And it can be sleazy. Yeah. And it's, you know? All like, yeah, sort of this formulaic process. Yeah. And they almost do like the good cop, bad cop kind of thing too, or you know, my manager, but I'll really, here's what I'm going to do for you.
Honestly, yeah. if you're really good at it, it's the furthest thing from a sleazy. If you're a really, really good salesman, you're a really effective communicator, and there's a very distinct difference between the consumer when you have somebody who sold them very well versus somebody who pushed them into it. And I used to say this all the time with my staff. I used to ask, you know, what do you think is the difference between a good closer and a great closer? I said, you know, a good closer can push almost anybody into a sale, overcome objections and keep asking and keep pushing and pushing and eventually get them to buy, right? And you just corner them. But a great salesman can pull somebody into a sale. And I think that is, and when you do that, when that person leaves, they don't have buyer's remorse. They mm-hmm. don't go like, oh my God, I got closed today. And they feel like those, when you get closed, you feel it and it doesn't feel good. But you walk away, you're excited. Like
that's a good job.
I made a great investment. I can't wait to start my fitness thing tomorrow. Like, you did a good job of mm-hmm. presenting the information, and there's definitely a big difference.
I remember when I bought one of my first cars, the guy came in the office. We did the whole back and forth type of thing. And then he did this whole, which I clearly saw about 30 seconds after he did it. We're going back and forth, and I don't remember what I wanted. I think I wanted to buy it was a truck, and I think I wanted it for like 12 grand out the door. I don't remember what it was. And they were trying to sell it to me for, you know, 14 or something. So he says, okay, what if I can do this? And he got a piece of paper and he wrote like 12.5. He says, if I can get this, is this going to work for you? I said, I think so. He goes, let me go ask my manager. He goes, but before I do, initial here that this is what you want. So he got me to initial on just a blank piece of paper, basically sign underneath it that I would do it for that price. Now, he knew what he was doing. He could get it. As soon as I did that, I said, this motherfucker's going to come back and say I can do that. Mm-hmm. But now I feel like I'm committed because I signed.
Right.
So as soon as he walked, I laughed. I laughed at the guy, and I'm like, you didn't ask your manager. And I'm like, whatever, we'll get the car anyway. But it was such a stupid, cheesy side this. Oh. Let me go ask my manager. I need your signature first.
Dude, did you ever get like just seriously cornered and trapped, though? Like from a salesman, like who just like was so insanely aggressive.
Well, you know who does
it's happened to me.
Those vacation ones.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. For timeshares. Yeah. Watch the fuck out. No, we were shopping for windows for my house, and we had gone through a few companies that were local, and just went to the displays, and like we found one that was okay, and like we just wanted to kind of shop around, and we were telling all these sales reps ahead of time, like, look, we want to see your product. We want you to explain the product in great detail, but I have other windows I'm looking into. And we made the mistake of having this guy actually come out. Like, so the first thing was he wanted to come out to the house and then do the measurements and then see what was the best fit. And like, that was all the information he gave me. And he's going through and he's showing me these miniature sized windows. And like, he was trying to sell me so hard on the fact that because it had this extra layer of clad sort of metal covering that it would provide all this insulation, it's going to do all this. I'm like, yeah, but it's fucking ugly. He's like, no. And he was like this Arab guy who was just very pushy. And he just kept hammering. He's like, no, this is the best. This is the best product you'll ever have, like forever. She will love it. And he's going off.
Commission
he's
like, on that.
Oh my God, he's measuring already in my house. And I'm like, and Courtney's like, is he still like, I'm like, look, I was like, I'm about getting ready for dinner soon. Like, I appreciate you coming out, this and that. No, here's what I'm going to do. He calls, he's on the phone. He's trying to call. I'm going to make this worth your while. What's your number? What's your number? I'll write it down. What's your number? Like, he was going to make any number work. I'm going to make it work. You know? And he's just
that's
like,
when you give him a ridiculous number.
I did.
That's what I always do.
And then still,
five.
Yeah.
$5.
Five.
You told me my number. That's what yeah. it was.
And I'm like, I don't even care. Like, I don't like your product. And I was like, you need to get out of here. Yeah. Like, I literally had to tell him, I don't like it. I want you to leave. You have to go.
Yeah.
Like, that's how hard he was pushing me. I was like, oh my God, this guy.
It's funny now. I mean, as I got into the skill of communicating, I used to appreciate seeing people who would do shit like that because I would just laugh, you know, yeah. And I would actually say it to their face.
Right. I'm a sucker, right. Man. If you're good at what you do, I'm a sucker. Like I won't fight you. Yeah, because there's a part of me, even if I don't want it.
But you see the skill.
Yeah, like yeah. I just like, hey, good job, man. You know, here you go. Here's my card. I'm never gonna use this shit.
I've hired a couple.
Wow,
people
you're
like
not
that.
Deterred at all.
Yeah, I've hired people like that where they'll do that to me, and after I'm done, I'll be like, you did a really good job. I don't want to buy your product, but you did a good job. But here's my card. I want you to work for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And they would end up coming work for me. But
no, I'm a sucker.
I think it's important to talk about this because I think the fitness industry does such a shitty job of communicating the right message that's part of the reason why the success rate is so low. Like a good example is selling so hard on one aspect of results, which is weight loss, like 30 pounds in 60 days, and you just sell that so fucking hard, people buy your whatever, don't lose the weight, or they follow your program, don't lose the weight, because it's way more complex than that. And then they never want to do it again.
Right, that's a good point.
Rather than communicating, like, here's all the other things that are going to happen besides the weight loss. And,
right.
and being honest. That was something I learned as a personal trainer. Like, be honest. When someone comes in and says, what can I expect? Be honest with what they can expect.
Yeah.
It has to be realistic.
It's not going to make people not hire you. I never had anybody say, oh, what? I can't lose 30. I'm not going to lose 30 pounds right away. Well, forget it, I'm not going to hire you. No, I'm just being honest with you.
You know, speaking of realistic expectations, I think a cool topic. We've been getting a lot of really good feedback, and I don't know if it's just because it's January and everybody's on the kick, but these kind of shorter one topic type of episodes that we've been doing, they've been getting shared a lot. And I don't know about you guys, but I've been getting a ton of DMs and responses. And so I thought a really cool thing to talk about today would be like comparing compound lifts to isolation exercises and the benefits and you know, is one better than the other? And, you know, are there ways to use
where one may apply versus the other?
Right. And, you know, in my space, like as far as the men's physique and bikini and the sculpting world, isolation exercises seem to dominate it. And it was one of the things that I saw right away as a as an opportunity for me. I was like, oh, wow. A lot of these guys just are fucking living on the cable and hammer strength machines all day long. I'm gonna build a physique and blow by these dudes. You give me enough time, and it's kind of what I saw happen. I mean, there's a good group of us that worked out at the same gym, and you know, I came from really deconditioned. I mean, I was at 19% of those that have seen my original pictures when I first started all this stuff. I definitely did not have a solid base by any means, and started building and sculpting a physique. And I had a group of guys that were men's physique guys and women bikini athletes, and we were all working out of the same gym. And I, of course, I'm paying attention to what everybody's doing. I'm just curious to how they're programming and what they're doing diet-wise. And I just saw a lot of flaws. And one of the biggest and most common flaws that I saw in that space, and what's interesting is we're talking about elite physiques. So maybe to the average eye, somebody wouldn't think they're doing anything wrong. And I think that's part of the problem. Mm-hmm. Is you see this person who's shredded and you see what they're doing and then you just assume like they must know what the fuck they're doing. And it's not that they're doing something wrong. I just saw a much better approach. And what that was these athletes, you know, doing the cable machines and the hammer strength, and the reasoning behind that was because they're not a strength athlete. I'm not a power lifter. You know, mm-hmm. Why would I be deadlifting and barbell squatting at them? And
I'm not trying to get all boxy.
And why would I do an overhead press? You know, mm-hmm. Like these movement, like I'm trying to sculpt and shape the body. And I was like, well, shit. The way I look at it from that perspective is, you know, if you've ever seen like a sculptor's tool set, it's not just one hammer and chisel. They've got a bunch of different chisels based off of where they're at on sculpting this piece of wood or block of ice or marble or whatever they're doing. And when you first go to work on that slab of marble, you are not using the same chisel to do the detail in a mustache as you are to get down to the first shape of what this thing is going to look like. And I think of sculpting the body as very similar. Like, Your isolation exercises are like the very fine chisels for a sculptor, and your other bigger tools are what knocks away the big chunks of rock and wood to kind of dwindle this thing down. And it doesn't mean that you couldn't use that little chisel to chisel away and get there too. It's just a much longer road that way. And so, you know, I was doing a lot of these compound lifts and just building mass and building and building and building. And I was also incorporating isolation exercises, but the bulk of my training and the bulk of my exercises came from the big compound lifts.
I would even take it a step further, because it's even more complex than that, right? Because, you know, as a trainer, I understood the value of isolation exercises aside from just sculpting the body. And I understood the value of compound movements aside from, you know, just making big changes. Now, before I get into them, it's important to, if you don't know what they are, isolation exercises typically focus mainly on one muscle, and they typically only involve one joint that's moving. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and now isolation, to be clear, you're never really pure.
It's impossible. It's impossible to isolate a muscle.
Yeah, like if I do a curl, it's an isolation movement. I'm only bending at the elbow.
You're affecting a bunch of muscles.
Yeah, but the main one that's doing the movement is the bicep.
Right.
Compound movements involve more than one joint, typically two, three, or more. And those exercises work just a greater degree of muscle mass. So like if I did a seated leg extension, that's an isolation movement for my quads. I'm only bending at the knees. If I do a squat, that's also a quadricep exercise, but I'm also bending at the hips and at the ankles, and I'm working a lot more than just my quads. And so that's really the big, and you can take all exercises, machine, free weight, kettlebell, whatever, body weight, and you can very easily place them into one of those two categories. Mm-hmm. Now, I love your analogy of the chisel, and I've used the analogy of a tool set just to illustrate the complexity of it, in the sense that, you know, when you have a tool set, the tools are designed and they're excellent at specific tasks. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make sense to use a screwdriver to hammer a nail, and it doesn't make sense to use a hammer to, you know, screw in a screw. Now, I could hammer the shit out of a screw into the wall and I'll get it in there, but a screwdriver is going to do a much better job. And so that's the way I like to look at those two different classes of exercises. So isolation movements, how are they great for the average person? They're going to help you connect to a muscle better than compound movements. They're just, compound movements is too complex to connect to a muscle. If I want someone to feel a particular muscle and feel it squeeze and burn and move and help them connect to it so that they can activate it at will, isolation exercises are going to help me do that. Yeah. So besides sculpting, isolation exercises for correctional exercise are phenomenal.
Oh, that's where I've always seen the most value out of isolation exercises, to highlight that neuromuscular connection, to get muscles to respond that aren't contributing. And so from sort of the opposite end of the spectrum is what Adam was describing. The focus of overall movement is always been something that I've paid attention to see the entire kinetic chain work in symphony. And that's something that I've always tried to implement amongst my clients, amongst my athletes. How can we iron out this process? How can we oil this machine to function at its highest capacity? And isolation exercises, if you take away the focus of these compound lifts, where you can sort of segment different parts of the lift, I can then zero in at a dysfunction I might see when I watch the whole movement take place. So if I see something where there's a little bit of a discrepancy, we can now zero in, we can focus on that muscular connection, and we can establish more strength that's going to contribute to a better fluid overall movement.
It's funny, I just got tagged yesterday on a post. They did a study relatively recently where they tested muscle activation. Have you seen these studies where they test the muscle activation for different exercises?
Yeah, yeah.
This exercise activates this muscle more than the other. And there's flaws in this because I only know this through experience.
I'm so glad that you're going to go here, because I know there is a percentage of people listening right now that come from the camp of the isolation camp. And this is part of the debate that I was having with Danny. Poor guy, I've been beating him up over that conversation quite a few times. But it's just,
they only beat up the ones we love.
And I do it not because to beat him up, because it's a really good example that he's a very intelligent kid, and this is the miss right here. This is that people see a study like, oh, there's, you know, when you do this exercise, there's all this muscle activation.
Way more activation.
Yeah, exactly. It's firing, right? Yeah. It's firing more, and so then we assume that means more muscle, and that's not necessarily true.
No, so the study showed that pre-exhausting a muscle in a pre-exhaust superset. This is where you do an isolation exercise first and then move directly to a compound movement. So here would be an example.
Leg extension to a squat.
To a squat or a fly to a bench press. So let's say I do a bench press and I want to really work on my chest, and I do flies first, because it isolates the pecs, and then go straight to bench press. Now the study shows no more activation of the pecs if you pre-exhaust them than before, because the argument always was, well, it helps you activate the muscle more. But that's not quite true. Yes, you can see through the study that it didn't get activated more. However, what they're doing is they're eliminating the perception that the client is getting, which is extremely important, okay? If I have a client that doesn't feel her glutes when she's doing a squat, and I do a pre-exhaust of an isolation movement first, and then she does a squat, the study may show that it's not activated more, but she feels it more. Now, why is that important? Because now that she feels the glutes more, that is going to help her activate them more later on as she continues to squat. It's going to help her feel the squat differently and feel it where she's supposed to feel it. And this is an important thing to understand.
Well, this is applied knowledge shit, bro.
Absolutely. This is the wisdom part. And this is why those studies always get on my nerves a little bit, because they'll show a study that shows, a donkey kickback will activate the glutes more than a barbell squat. Sure. But is it going to build more muscle and shape in the glutes than squat? No, right. It won't. That's
and
not what the...
How much load can you apply?
That's right. Here's and that's another one. Isolation exercise is fantastic at activating muscles, which we said is very important. But they don't build as much muscle as compound movements. They just don't. They're not going to give you the strength, the muscle, the metabolism boosting effects, all the wonderful effects you get from resistance training at nearly the same rate as compound movements. They just aren't. And it's not even a, you can't even equal it out. For example, if I did 5 isolation exercises for my delts, is that going to give me the same kind of muscle building effect that maybe an overhead press might give me? No, it doesn't necessarily add up that way, because I've heard people say that. Well, I might not squat, but I do way more exercises and I do all these other isolation movements. Like, you could do leg extensions and abduction and adduction and, you know, donkey kickbacks and hamstring curls and sissy squats and all these isolation exercises for your legs, but are they going to build the same amount of strength and muscle as good old barbell squats done properly? They're not. So when you look at your overall routine, your routine should be centered, I didn't say all of it, but should be centered around compound movements and should be centered around mastering those compound movements. And the isolation exercises should be used as ways to feel muscles, to activate them more, to connect to them more, and to maybe target them a little bit differently than you may be targeting with your regular movement in the compound exercise. Now, that being said, you can always flip things on their head. One of the things I love about resistance training is the rules don't always apply.
Yeah.
So I would 9 out of 10 times have someone do barbell squats before leg extensions. But 1 out of 10 times, it's better to do leg extensions first before you do the squats. And part of that has to do with how your body adapts and changes, you know, according to the types of things that you're doing. And I do that all the time with my routine. I'll throw in the isolation exercises first, then do my compound. And I don't mean all the time as in super frequently, but I mean frequently enough to where it becomes a part of my
routine. Well, you also have to look at exercises too, not just, okay, so we gave that analogy of like the video game where, you know, this means I get 2 points towards this attribute. This means I get 1 point towards this attribute. This means I get 3 points that attribute. And so if you were to say burn calories, build muscle, central nervous system adaptation, muscle activation, like maybe are like four.
Function, strength.
Function,
all that.
Yeah. Okay, those are like all these attributes. And then you start to separate movements. And then you could say like, okay, well, maybe a leg extension gives you 3 points on muscle activation for the quads, you know, which is more than the squat because the squat only gives you 2. But then the squat gives you 3 on central nervous system adaptation and gives you 4 on strength. And so, which eventually has carryover into building and developing that muscle. And so there's so much further to look into it than these isolated studies that we read and we debate over all the time.
Well, there's a localized adaptation muscle building effect that you get from an exercise, and then there's a systemic one. Now, and they've proven this with these bilateral training studies where they'll take somebody and they'll have them train just one arm, and they'll notice a huge strength increase in the one arm that they train, but they also notice a bit of a strength increase in the opposite arm that wasn't even doing the exercise. So when I'm doing an exercise, it's such a big movement, a big gross motor movement like a deadlift or a squat, I might not activate the quads like I will with a hard leg extension, but I'm going to build more muscle overall and probably more in my quads because of that systemic effect. And that's really my best attempt at explaining what happens, because I'll tell you right now, this is hands down, bar none, all exercises are not created equal.
Yeah.
Some are far superior to those.
When you mentioned function too is one of those attributes that, you know, you're trying to seek. So if I'm always constantly isolating and working joint by joint, we're not communicating with the entire system on a regular basis, where there's going to inevitably, if that's my go-to all the time, there's going to be interruptions in that communication chain. And so in terms of like actual movement and fluidity of the movement, yeah, in terms of that versus like a compound lift where all of that gets expressed, all of that has to work simultaneously together, there is going to be somewhat of a it's going to be affected for the overall if all I do is isolation exercises.
The deceiving part is the feeling, right? Like that's the part that's where I think it's hard to convince people.
Yeah, I really feel that.
Yeah, I mean that the reason why we see donkey kickbacks, you know, all day long, and less of those same people squatting and sumo deadlifting and doing all these other great movements if they really wanted to build their butt. Is because when you get on you attach a cable to your ankle and you do a donkey kickback, like you feel it in your butt. It's almost hard not to. I mean, because it is an isolation exercise. So trying to convince the average gym goer that I know you feel that more in your butt, or I know you feel that more in your shoulder, but what I'm telling you, you're going to get way more results from this exercise and this exercise where you actually have a hard time feeling it. That's hard to communicate that.
Well, I mean, deadlifts build very strong, muscular, impressive backs. Do you feel deadlifts specifically in areas of your back like you do with a pullover or a lat pull down or a cable row?
You feel it in your entire backside, all the way down.
You really don't, right? You really don't feel it. I can feel my shoulders way more with a lateral.
You know, it's a good
than I can with an overhead press.
You know, it's a cool using that analogy. Something I like to do to show people to showcase the real impacts of like a deadlift for the back is go over and deadlift, get your warm up set or what that, so your mechanics are down, and then within two or three sets, get close to your one rep max. So get up there strength-wise, but don't do it so many sets that you fatigue. And then go over and go do a lat pull down or go do a seated row afterwards. You'll be blown away by your strength going over to that. Versus if I go right into a lat pull down or a seated row and I start there first, my strength will be at what I'll have, whatever my number is, right? Like if it's like 150 that I lat pull down, technically, if I just go over there. If I go deadlift, you know, that's first, like two or three sets, real heavy. Same thing works too. Like if you go do like a really heavy pull up and then you go do a movement like that. And that to me is that's where the CNS stuff, that it's hard to explain and show people what's going on there. Like you're really waking up that muscle and you get used to all of a sudden pulling 400 pounds off. Then you go over and ask yourself to lat pull down 150, 200 pounds. It feels like nothing in comparison.
God, if people, when they went to the gym, just avoided the machines, not saying that they're bad, but I'm just saying these are people who just want to start working out, want to start lifting weights, avoided the machines and just practiced, went to the gym and practiced how to squat, practiced how to deadlift, how to row, how to bench press, how to overhead press, maybe a rotational exercise in there like a chop, a cable chop. That's all. You just went in and practiced those movements or variations of those movements. You get so much better results than if you went into the gym and did 15 machines each time you worked out.
Yeah.
I mean, it would literally, there would be no comparison.
And there's also, I mean, there's risk versus reward for a lot of times. People like you have to weigh this out. And I know that a lot of gyms started to be structured more into the isolating, machine-driven type of a gym because of the safety element that they provide. So it's in a fixed plane. You're basically able to control a lot of what force is being applied, and you don't have to consider more factors. So there is that element that, and I know like a lot of coaches and trainers, and this is where like a lot of them lean on machines and isolating exercises because of the fact that It's easier to control. Yeah,
it's easy.
It's easier like movement. Easy. Yeah, people like easy for sure.
Well, you go into the gym, you look at the picture, it tells you what to do. Here's your elbows, your hands go here, curl this, push that. I'm done. Walk up to a barbell. What you're looking at is a canvas. You know what I mean? Like there's no numbers. There's no paint by numbers. It's just a canvas and a paintbrush.
Yeah.
Okay, because I could do 5 million things with a barbell or 5 million things with a dumbbell.
Think of it. What would you guys say? And we're going to totally speculate right here, and I'm sure I'll get crucified for it, but I don't care. If you were to say, I'm going in and I'm going to do either I'm doing all cable machine stuff, right? I'm going to do hammer strength. I'm going to do cable push down shit. I'm going to just do a bunch of shit like that. Or I'm going to squat 5 sets. How many cable machine exercises do you think you have to do to be equivalent to the benefits that you get from five sets of squats? I'm serious. Like, how many? Think about it. How many sets?
Equivalent?
Yeah, to be equivalent.
I don't think you can compare. I really don't. I don't think there's a whole. It would be a lot of time. Then you'd get diminishing returns.
Yeah, because even if you're building up, you're basing that off of volume. Because, I mean, the load itself is going to be totally different.
Right.
And so, like, to be able to match that's, like, almost impossible.
That's what I'm saying, like, hypothetically. I mean, we're just speculating right now. I would think that because I could go over and I can go do some leg press, some leg extension.
Oh, you're going to count leg press, too. So that's a compound movement, but it's not like a squat, sure.
Right. And some leg curls and some other machine stuff. Maybe some donkey kickbacks I might throw in there because whatever.
You'd have to throw a lot in there.
Right. I really feel like you'd have to do, like, a good 15 to 20 sets.
A lot, yeah.
15 to 20 sets of other exercises that are on machines and cables to just be able to argue that it was, and that's just to argue. It's not to say that it is more. Mm-hmm. I'm not even, because I think you're right. There's certain things that you can't get from a machine that you're getting from the benefits of squatting. But if you were to, from a volume perspective or from a building muscle perspective, what would I say? I would say it would take like 15 to 20. It's like five times, right? It's like 4 to 5 times more the benefit. And that, again, going back to something I've said quite a bit lately on this podcast, is I wish more people would pick just one of those movements, squatting, deadlifting, overhead pressing, maybe bench press last out of those, but, you know, one of those big movements and spend the whole hour just getting good at it.
Practicing.
Yeah. And take 3-4 minutes in between, 5 minutes in between sets and do some mobility work and, you know, pay attention to your feet and think about the movement and get better at it and then get back underneath it and just.
I would get these clients sometimes who were pretty advanced. They've been working out a lot and been working out for years and they would come hire me. And I used to love it sometimes because I'd say, okay, show me your workouts. Show me what you do. And I'd look at their workouts and if I saw that squats or deadlifts was not in the routine, I was like, oh, I'm going to blow them away.
Oh, here it comes.
Yeah, like this is going to be easy. And these are advanced people. And I was so confident because I knew just those two exercises alone was going to show them results they'd never seen before and they'd think I was a god.
Right.
Yeah. And sure enough, every time they would come in, advanced as they were, oh, I do leg press and hack squat and leg curls and this and that, and I do cable rows, and I'd get them good at squatting and deadlifting. And sure enough, they just see crazy gains. I had one guy that hired me. He was an older gentleman, 60 years old, but very fit, worked out for a long time. And he actually worked out with another trainer, so he wasn't even on his own. So he came from another personal trainer. And he came into my studio because his personal trainer had moved out of the state. So he's looking for a new trainer and was thinking about maybe changing gym. So he walked into my facility, and we sat down, and I was very impressed with the way he looked. He was lean and fit. And we started talking about training, and I convinced him to hire me as a personal trainer. So he walks in, and he brings me his workout, and I take a look at it, and I said, okay, we're going to try squatting. And he goes, my trainer always told me never to squat. I said, well, how come? He goes, well, I squatted a couple times, and I felt my back wasn't good. I said, well, it just means we're probably going to have to take our time, but I'll get you good at squatting, and then we'll see what happens. I mean, this 60-year-old guy, I mean, in a three-month period, we put a good 7 pounds of lean body mass on his body, which for somebody who'd been training for that long, the guy was blown away. He was absolutely blown away. He's like, I can't believe that my body can put muscle on and all you're just having me do different movements, the ones I was told I couldn't do before. The funny thing is back became so much stronger as a result of doing them properly. The other thing too, and maybe it's a good thing that maybe we go through and list some of our best favorite exercises. I mean, we've talked about barbell squats and deadlifts and overhead presses, but one class of exercises that I think doesn't get enough attention that I believe to be up there, almost as important as I would say a squat, are the split stance exercises, your lunge movements. Mm-hmm. And many times I would start a client off in a lunge who couldn't squat because I could get them to hold on to something with balance and get them to learn how to do. And really, a lunge is nothing more than a single leg
squat.
It's a split leg, split stance squat. Those movements are phenomenal for balancing out the body and getting them strong. And there's even some argument that I've heard to say that those are even more functional than squats. Although mm-hmm. I'm
well, technically we were on one leg always, right? So mm-hmm. that's why the argument is it Boyle who's in that camp?
Yeah,
it's Mike Boyle who's in that camp, and I don't think he's wrong. I don't think it's wrong or right. And
he makes a good point.
Yeah, and you can load some Bulgarian squats, man. You can.
That was most of the point is you can add a substantial amount of load and. The other thing is the compressive forces, you know, on the spine, which, you know, for you know, somebody who's an advanced lifter who's going to really add a significant amount of load on there, like there is a lot more. The risk goes way up, right?
Right, right.
And so there is that as a factor. However, you know, we weigh all these things out based off of what has the most impact, what has the most effect, and you want to be efficient as you're in the gym and build. If building muscle is my goal, this is you can't. It's undeniable the barbell squat.
Now you just reminded me of something that I want to touch on because I got a message on YouTube. We have a thing, and I don't know. It's been a while since we've mentioned this, but. We did, I believe, just red and green. I don't know if we did red, green, and black, or did we do all three? I know we did red and we did green.
No, we didn't do black.
Okay, so we did red and green. We
first 30 days.
First 5 days.
Oh, 5 days, excuse me.
Yeah, we did the first 5 days of the program for people to test drive. Hmm. And somebody on the YouTube channel was like, you know, I don't understand the programming. You guys talk so highly about compound lifts and there's, you know, bicep curls twice in here. And why isn't there more compound lifts than this? And so... And we're again going on like this rant of the importance of compound, but there is something important also about isolation exercises that you have to take into consideration too, is it does a really good job of activating or working a muscle without doing a lot of systemic damage or stress to the CNS.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And
yeah, you take a set of squats to failure versus a set of curls. One of those is going to fuck you up. The other one, you'll be fine. Five minutes.
And I know that there might be some people that have seen me working out in the gym and have been like, I see Adam on machines and cables and shit like that all the time, especially when I was competing. But I was in the gym 7 days a week. And there's no way I'm in the gym 7 days a week and deadlifting and squatting and overhead pressing every single day. Mm. It's just too taxing on the body. So there is this sweet spot of compound movements are king. Are the better exercises for building muscle, burning fat, sculpting the body for the most part and should be the foundation of and the bulk of most programs. Mm-hmm. But with that being said, you also still have to take into consideration too that if you're training a lot of these exercises, how taxing it can be on the body and if it's beginning to hinder the next workout.
There's an order of operations.
Right.
And that's, I mean, that's definitely a good point to bring up. What order do I place these compound movements within my workout? And, you know, so I'm most effective, you know, for performing the exercise, getting the maximal benefit out of the exercise. And then, you know, at the end, to really highlight and emphasize other muscle groups through isolation exercises.
That's a very good point. The lower amount of volume that you do in your workout, the more your exercises should mostly be compound movements. The higher the volume, the more isolation movements you can add. So if I were to say you're going to go to the gym and spend, you know, 30 minutes in the gym to work out, pretty much all your exercises are compound. You're going to go in the gym and spend an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Then maybe, you know, 30% of them can be isolation. So it's like the higher the volume, the more that you start to throw in isolation, because there definitely is that, you know, that effect from compound, difficult, gross motor movement exercises where they just fatigue the shit out of your body. They really do. I mean, if I did an hour and a half of all compound movements, I wouldn't be able to work out for a few days.
You may as well be CrossFit then.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? That's part of the problem that we saw in the programming of CrossFit is that
they completely eschew isolation. Like those are a waste of time.
Yeah, yeah. They're anti-isolation, and then they're so much compound lifts and compound lifts to fatigue that it's like that's poor programming.
It's funny because more and more strength athletes, you know, people who compete and just lifting maximal loads, are starting to utilize isolation exercises as part of their training. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to notice. Because they're finding that they can add more volume without taxing the body as much, and it's also helping them prevent injury.
Right.
But on the flip side, look, people generally, though, need to do more compound movements. Just the everyday average people need to do more compound movements. And it, unfortunately, a lot of the programs that are out there, especially the programs that are advertised to women, those ones are isolation heavy and largely wasting a lot of your time. It's just the bottom line. I buy these programs all the time and I look over them. And it's all the ones advertised for women. Mm-hmm. And I look at the exercises and they're either not using enough load. Yeah, the reps are
lightweight, an insane amount of reps and all isolation movements.
And lots of isolation movements. Yeah. You'll feel the burn. You'll feel this and that. You're just not going to get really, really good results from doing those versus doing the compound.
You see a lot of plyometric work too with that. I see a lot
because
of
it's tiring.
Yeah.
You know, it's the whole, like, I like to sweat and I like to, you know, breathe hard. And then that supposedly equates to an effective workout when that's not necessarily the case.
If I were to break up my workout in a day and then break up my programming in a week, I would make a general, this is a general statement too, and there's always exceptions to the rule, but I would say for the most part, I like to have three good days of, you know, three good days of lots of compounds lifts in there. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're never going to really find me squatting more than three times in a week. You're never going to find me deadlifting more than about three times a week. You're never going to find me bench pressing more than three times a week. That tends to be about the threshold for compound lifts for me as far as speaking to a week. As far as speaking to a workout, I'm not spending more than about a half hour or 45 minutes on compound lifts. If I'm staying in the gym for an hour or longer, the rest of it's going to be isolation exercises. So that's kind of the threshold that I have found. I've done it where I've gone beyond that, and what I start to see a regression from how hard I'm hitting it. That's when the achy joints start to happen, or I start to see myself not able to lift as much as I did the previous week. Mm-hmm. I start to notice that when I go beyond that.
Well, think about it this way. If you went to the gym to work out today and you were supposed to work out your legs and you could only do one exercise, I could pretty much guarantee that one exercise is going to be a compound exercise.
Well, what's going to happen as soon as we hang these mics up, that's exactly what I'm doing today. I'm only going to lift I only got a little bit of time before I'm going to head back home. And so I'm just going to squat. I'll probably get five sets of squats.
Okay. Now, let's say you could do two exercises. Then the odds that the second exercise or compound still pretty high.
Right, yeah. Right.
Once we get to three, four, or five, now the odds are higher that it's going to be isolation. Like if I know I'm going to hit my chest today and I'm only doing one exercise, compound. Yeah. I'm only doing two exercises, probably still both compound. I'm doing three exercises, that third exercise will probably be in isolation.
Right.
It's the more volume you do, the more that the isolation becomes makes sense. And again, not because we're just beating the shit out of analogies, I'll just use another one. Yeah. It's like making if I'm making a stew, your compound movements are your meat and potatoes. All the isolation stuff is the onions and the garlic and the salt and the pepper and all that stuff. And it all comes together as a nice recipe.
No, that's good.
But if I make a...
That'd be a terrible stew with just big old thing of onion and fucking...
That's right. It's
peppered in meat. You know what I'm saying? I'd be mad at you.
Where's the meat and potatoes?
Flavorless meat soup.
it's just onion soup, yeah. You know? Excellent. So look, if you go to mindpumpfree.com, you can download any one of our free guides. We have about 9 on there. They're all fitness and health and nutrition guides. Again, mindpumpfree.com. You can also find us all on Instagram on our own personal Instagram pages. My page is mindpumpsal. Justin can be found at mindpumpjustin, and Adam is at mindpumpadam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.